Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on property. Is the holy grail of law when we come back. You know, many of the lessons that you hear on this Law Hour program are just a small part of our two-week school on courtroom strategy and procedure. And this class includes lessons ranging from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, summons, or citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits into evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, and asseverations. And we don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, what papers to file, how to put exculpatory evidence into the record, how to present your legal and lawful positions, what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. Now, there are 28 essential elements to master in courtroom strategy and procedure, and you'll learn them here at the law school in this class. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, property is the holy grail of law. And this thing of property, especially when we're dealing with property and land, really isn't property and land. It's called the subject of property. Subject of property. Let's understand that. Land is something you can't pick up and take with you. So you can pick up your watch and take that with you. That's called chattel property. And property comes in two forms. It's either real or chattel. See how simple this is? Law in its simplest form is just one or the other. And so when we're talking about deeds, you know, well, there's six deeds. When we're talking about marriage, well, there's three forms. When we're talking about property, it's either corporal or incorporal. I mean, we're not talking about 10, 15, 50, 100, or 300 things you got to memorize here. We're just talking about simple functions of law that you should have learned when you were about 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. You know, like thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery. And God, you know, we can teach this to children. Surely you adults out there with college degrees and education, now you can learn this. Now, the reason that you're not taught law and you're not given a legal education is because you're being dumbed down. People that cannot defend themselves and cannot assert their rights can be controlled. And that's the objective here. See, we send you to school and we call you educated, and actually you're not. You're ignorant. Or as it says in the scripture, you're poor, naked, and blind. And you think you're smart. You think you're educated. You got a piece of paper you're hanging up on the wall. And you're telling everybody how smart you are. But when it comes right down to, well, what do you know? Well, you don't know much, especially about law. And law is so important because, see, it governs everything you do in life. Everything. Hell, you can't go out and get in your car and drive to work without being influenced and impacted upon by the law. You have to drive so fast, you got to drive on the right side of the road. Well, here in the United States, you do. You know, you have to stop at the stop signs. You got to do all these, the 2,000 things that you have to know and do to drive an automobile. That's 2,000 laws in your traffic code. And that's just driving to work, for crying out loud. Everything that we do in life is regulated by law. And now your government is doing everything they can to keep you as ignorant as possible about the law. Well, it makes sense. The more ignorant you are, the more laws you'll break, and the more laws you break, the more fines we can impose, the better we can control you. Think of it this way. If everybody in the country obeyed all of the laws all of the time, well, then what in the hell would you need policemen for? Why would you need judges and courts? Why would you need locks on your door? If everybody practiced thou shalt not steal, it would totally destroy the lock and security industry. Just put them out of business. No more safes. No more locks. See, all you people that are working at the master lock company, thank God there are thieves out there. And the more thieves there are, the better it is for your business. Because if these people obeyed the law, you'd be out of business. You'd be out of a job. All right, now let's learn something here about corporeal and incorporeal. Property is again divided into corporeal and incorporeal. The former comprehends such property as is perceptible to the senses, such as lands, houses, goods, merchandise, and the like. But the latter consists in legal rights, such as choses in action, easements, and the like. Now, in a strict legal sense, land is not property. Remember I told you that last time. I said, hey, wait a minute. There's no such thing as a property tax. That's because land isn't property. I know. And when I tell people that, see, you've been to public school. And when you got out of public school, you learned about property and property taxes. And you learned about your house, and they call that property. And you learned about paying a property tax, and it's in your vocabulary. It's in your brain. Okay. But it's false. Just like a warranty deed is false. It's a fiction. So we create these fictions, and then we educate you to these fictions, and then when you walk into the courtroom and you use these fictions, like, I am a sovereign citizen, my God, the judge looks at you and says, my God, what a fool this is. Look at this fool standing before me, spouting off that he's a sovereign citizen. What would you think if you walked into a whorehouse and this whore said, I have 20 years of experience and I am a virgin? Come on. Come on. You know, there's this thing that we call oxymoron, you know, like military intelligence. Come on, wake up here. Now, although in common parlance it is applied to a tract of land as a chattel, in its legal signification it means only the right of the owner in relationship to it. It denotes a right over a determined thing. Property is the right of any person to possess, use, enjoy, and dispose of a thing. Okay? And it's what we call, land is what we call the subject of property. Subject of property. It isn't the property itself, it's the subject. And the subject of property is your rights in relation to the property. See, I can own a piece of property that I don't even possess, and then I have the title to it, and the bank has the title to your car. Now, you commonly say, you know, if I said, hey, how are we going to go? And you'd say, well, we will take my car. Sir, you don't own a car. Let me repeat that. I don't care where you people live on planet Earth. It is true, there's probably some people out there who do own an automobile. But I could say as a general rule, there's nobody on this planet that owns an automobile. That's another oxymoron. You don't own that car. Now, I can tell you with specificity that there's nobody on this planet that owns any land. There's no such thing as land ownership on planet Earth. There is not one human being on this planet that has ever owned one square foot of real estate. I know we commonly call this my house and my land and my farm. You know, I understand the common vernacular. But the reality of it is you don't own that. It is true that you're in occupation of it. It is true that that's where you live and sleep and hang up your hat and so on. But that does not mean that you own it. And the prima facie evidence that you don't own it is the rent that you're paying on it. See, if you own something, you don't pay anybody else rent, and you don't listen to anybody else as they tell you how to dispose of it. If you own a piece of property, then it's yours to dispose of any way you want to. You know, you can give it away to any other person without any consideration or with consideration. You can even throw it away. You can burn it up. Now, go out there and burn your house to the ground, and you find out whether you own that house or not. You'll go to jail. I'm telling you right now. You go out here and burn your house to the ground, and somebody will say, well, what happened? Well, I got tired of my house, so I burned it to the ground. The police will arrest you instantly and haul you off to jail. That's not your house. You don't own it. You have what we call an equitable interest. You are what is known as a holder in due course. You may have the highest and best right of possession, but you don't own it. Somebody else owns it. The bank owns it. The state owns it, as evidenced by the mortgage that you're paying and as evidenced by the property tax you're paying. Automobiles. You don't own the automobile. You have to register it every year. And in addition to that, it's got a license plate on the end of it. And the license plate identifies the owner. It's the flag. It's a flagship is what it is. And it's an admiralty term. And that automobile has a flag, and mine has Missouri written on it, both ends, Missouri. And I have to pay Missouri a fee every year. And so that tells me exactly who owns it. I'm driving the state of Missouri's automobile. And so it shouldn't be surprising that the state of Missouri wants to regulate and control the use of their automobile. They want me to drive it just so fast. They want me to drive it on one side of the road or the other. They want me to stop at stop signs. Same thing happens when you go down and rent a Hertz car. Hertz. See, you drive out in a Hertz car, and in the vernacular, we'd say, oh, which car is yours? Oh, mine is the red car over there, the red Ford. No, that's not your car. You're driving a Hertz car. You have the highest and best right to use that car during the term of the rental contract. But that doesn't mean you own it. Hertz has a higher claim than you have. And then the state has a higher claim than Hertz has. And then the bank, well, in this case, the bank has a higher claim than Hertz. And then the state has a higher claim than the bank. So there's a pecking order to property. Now, if you're at the top of the pecking order, well, then you have the sole and despotic use of the property, and you can dispose of it in any way you want to. Now, if you have an equitable interest in the property, you might be able to sell it. For instance, you can sell that car. You can't sell Hertz's car, but you can sell your equitable interest in your car. So when I sell a piece of property, I sell it with a quit claim deed. I don't sell it with a warranty deed. When you're selling with a warranty deed or a grant deed, you're claiming that you own the land physically and that you're selling the dirt. I'm not selling the dirt, the rocks, the sand, and the material. I'm selling my right to use that sand, rock, and dirt. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, there's a prior claim in Leviticus 25:23. The creator of the universe says, "The land is mine." He says, the land shall not be sold forever because the land is mine. So if you want to know who owns this piece of rock floating around in space that we call planet Earth, The creator of it says, I own that. That thing is mine. And for you to say that, well, I own this house, I own this land, or something like that, is a fiction. Secondly, there's another entity over here that's making a similar claim to that. It's your state or your county. Here in Missouri, there's an institution here called the State of Missouri. It's a politically incorporated entity. It's a political entity. It's incorporated. And they say that they own this piece of real estate here, as evidenced by the fact that all the people that live here pay rent to the state and to its agencies or fiduciaries. So people will come here and say, oh, Mr. Gordon, what a beautiful farm you have. And then I correct them and I say, well, this is a beautiful farm, but it's not mine. And they look at me and they say, oh, I thought you owned this farm. No, I don't. I'm just the equitable holder in due course. There's some other people here that actually own it, as is evidenced by the fact that I pay a property tax on it. I rent it. Now, if you want to test that, just don't pay the rent and find out what happens. Test it. People have done that. They don't want to pay their property tax, and they say, well, I've got an allodial title to my land. Well, there is a real term out here called allodial tenure and title, but that doesn't mean that you hold it. There might be somebody out there that has an allodial tenure and title. If there is, I don't know who they are. I wouldn't say that there aren't any. In theory, there could be. There used to be a time here in America before the Land Patent Act of 1820 when we held allodial tenure and title. The Constitution of Pennsylvania talks about allodial tenure and title in your Constitution, but you people have all been removed from allodiums, and you have been placed as tenant sharecroppers on somebody else's land. That's the legal effect for you people in Pennsylvania. Every once in a while, somebody will call me and they'll make a statement, you know. And so as I'm listening to you, I'm evaluating your level of understanding, just like the judge does. When you come into court and you start spouting off, the judge is sitting there, and he is evaluating your level of understanding of the law. Most people's understanding of law is very, very low. Very low. Now, the Creator, God, the Creator of the universe, He wants you to have a good, high understanding of law and how it works and why it works that way. And that's why He instructed us to instruct our children, and your daddy should have instructed you, in the Ten Commandments. And then the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments that go along with those Ten Commandments. And then in the practice and the usage of them, you should practice and use those statutes so you get good at them. You know, kind of like operating that bobcat. You know, the more practice you get, the better you get at using it, the better you get at the feel of it, and then the more value that you can get out of it, the more useful, productive work you can get out of it. Okay, now let's take a look at a case here that actually came down. I used to have a student one time. His name was Pat Conley. I haven't heard from Pat for many years. He's older than I am. He was an old man. Hell, when I was 40, I think he was pushing 70. And so I'm just guessing that by now, either Pat's 110 years old or he's dead by now. But old Pat Conley was a very, very sharp guy in one specific area of law called zoning and planning. I mean, Pat went out and he did his homework and he got that zoning and planning thing right down to a gnat's whisker. See? And at the time, I didn't have a lot of good understanding of law in general. And I didn't have a whole lot of understanding of zoning and planning in particular, but Pat did. So he said, hey, follow me and I'll show you how this works. So Pat Conley had a house with 7 acres on Eustick Road out in Ada County, Idaho. You know, we commonly call that Boise, Idaho, but at the time it was outside the city limits on Eustick Road. It was an old farm, and it had been broken up, and by now housing developments and subdivisions had been put in. And Pat Connolly was totally surrounded by subdivisions, and he had this 7 acres sitting out here, kind of like having a house and 7 acres in downtown Manhattan. You know, could you imagine such a thing? Here's Pat living on his house and 7 acres. Now, all of these subdivisions that have been built on 20 acres here and 10 acres there and 30 acres over there, these people have to dispose of their sewage. They have to have water, they have to have power, they have to have sewage, you know. And so, as these subdivisions have been put together, the evolution of law comes into play, and Ada County created what they call a LID, an L-I-D, which is an acronym for a Limited Improvement District. It's a little political subdivision. They tax the inhabitants, and they have to have a purpose. And so they created this LID to create a sewer and water district so that they could dispose of all this sewage and water that they need to deliver and put in streets and curbs and gutters and, you know, all the things that people want out there, you know, paved streets and highways and so on. So they created this LID. Now, Pat Connolly is right in the middle of this LID. And so they come along and they say, okay, now all of you people out here have to hook up to this sewer. And so they came out there with big equipment and they dug up Eustick Road and they put this great big pipe down the middle of it. And they put water pipes in and they put curbs and gutters, you know, all the neat things that people want. But now we got to pay for this. And so Ada County creates this limited improvement district and they just tell everybody, it says, okay, well now everybody, you have 30 days to hook up, and it's going to cost you $300 to do this and $400 to do that. And then we're going to send you a bill every month for your water and sewer, and that'll be $10 a month. And, you know, everybody lives happily ever after. And so most of the people, when they got their notices, see, they vote on these things. You know, they have this bond issue, and then you people all go to the polls and you vote on it. And then they create it. You probably don't know how it works or why it works that way, so that's why they send you a letter to give you direction. They just say, make out your check and send it to. All right. Well, one day Pat Connolly got his letter in the mail, and it says, make out your check and send it to. And so while everybody else is busily hooking up to the sewer, Pat Connolly has a septic tank on his house in 7 acres, and he has a well, and so he's got water, and he's got his sewage taken care of, and then he's got electric power. Hell, this has been here for years. It's what we call grandfathered in. So Pat Connolly is grandfathered in. Then this is a property right. See, we're dealing with, well, it could be property, or it could be mere regulation. Now, see, under the regulations and under the statutes, you have to hook up to the sewer. You have to subscribe to the water. And most people do that. They can follow directions. Pat Connolly couldn't. Pat Connolly was an iconoclast, first cabin. And so he didn't within the 30 days or 90 days, he did not hook up to the sewer. He didn't hook up to the water. And so the LID sent him some urgent letters, and they said, you better do this, and if you don't do this, we're going to put a lien on your property, and we're going to prosecute you, and we're going to punish you and fine you and do all these bad, wicked, terrible, awful things to you. Now, most people, when they receive letters like that, they go hire a lawyer. And then the lawyer advises them, well, you know, it would be better for you if you just, you know, didn't get uppity here, and if you just ride the back of the bus, things will be a whole lot better for you. And so Pat ignored all these letters, and he didn't throw them away. Now he didn't burn them. Now he got a binder, and he punched them with a 3-hole punch, and he put them in the binder, and he developed quite a record of letters and communication that came. And Pat Connolly answered every single letter. He did not ignore these letters coming from this limited improvement business. They'd write him a letter, and he'd write him a letter back and tell him, no, I thank you for your offer, but I don't want to join your sewer water district. I don't want to buy your water. I don't want to pay for sewage disposal. And in fact, one letter he wrote him, he said, I don't have any sewage. Pat Connolly did not have any sewage. And so some time went by. Well, one day they sent him a notice and they said, well, we have placed a lien on your property. Now, most people, when they get a letter like that, we have liened your property, would get excited and go hire a lawyer. Pat took the letter and he answered it. And he said, now, naughty, naughty, you shouldn't put liens on my property. In fact, I think he wrote him a letter and demanded that they take the lien off. He did not acquiesce to their putting a lien on his property. But he didn't sue anybody. He didn't do anything, and some time went by. In fact, several years went by. As I recall, about 7 years went by. And this lien was for about $10 a month. And it totaled, after 7 years, $800, 800 and some change. Well, Pat Connolly has got this lien on his property for $800 for not hooking up to the sewer water district, plus interest, plus all these costs and all these threats. And, you know, normal people get real excited. Their adrenaline flows. They get real nervous. They just don't know what to do. They call lawyers. They sue. They get sued. They go to jail. They just have all kinds of problems. Pat didn't have a single problem. Pat kept a careful record and diary of everything that went on. He had a binder. He had all the communications, all the certified letters. And he had copies of all the letters that he had sent back in response. He had done his homework. He built a case. Now, time is going on, but Pat has never been damaged. I mean, nobody ever came out there and took his house away. Nobody ever hauled him off in handcuffs. You know, and until you have a damage, you don't have an action. That's the bottom line. An Anglo-Saxon administration, no damage, no action. It's called the standing doctrine, and Pat didn't have any standing to sue the LID, and the LID didn't have any standing to sue Pat, and so, you know, they're sending him letters and threatening, and they got a lien on his property, and so, all right, now some years go by. One day, a developer came over to Pat, and he said, Pat, I will give you $70,000. I will give you $10,000 an acre for these 7 acres. Now, you got to remember, this is many years ago. This is before all this crazy inflation thing hit. $70,000 was a god-awful lot of money back in 1970, you know, or so. And Pat could not resist the $10,000 an acre. And he said, okay, I'll sell. You know, for $1,000 an acre, he wouldn't sell. For $2,000 an acre, $3,000, $5,000. But when it got to $10,000, it just tickled his greed button, and he just couldn't contain himself. And he said, sold. So they went to the closing, and, you know, you're all sitting around the table over here, and the LID was there. And they said, listen, we got an $800 lien on this property. We demand our $800 or you can't make this sale. And so here you're at the closing. You got $70,000. Here's a cashier's check for $70,000. And Pat Connolly stood up and he said, I don't owe you $800. And they said, well, yes, you do. You have to pay us $800 for 7 years. You know, we've delivered sewer and water to you, and you haven't hooked up to it, and you didn't follow the law and the rules and the regulations and the statutes, and you got to pay us. And so, and here's the choice. You know, it's either pay them the $800 or the deal doesn't close. Now, most people, when they got a $70,000 check over here versus $800, would capitulate and pay the $800, and they'd walk out with $69,200. See, but not Pat. Pat said, "I don't owe you $800, and I ain't gonna pay it." And they said, well, then you ain't selling the property. And Pat said, well, I'm going to sell the property. And I'm going to get paid the $70,000. That there isn't any doubt about. What's in question here is who's going to pay the $70,000 and when. That's the issue that's going to be litigated. Who's going to pay it and when is it going to get paid? Whether or not it's going to get paid is already settled in law. So they walked out, and Pat didn't get his $70,000 check, and the developer didn't get his land, and the LID didn't get their $800. So Pat went home and he wrote up a lawsuit, and he sued the LID. He sued them for $70,000 plus punitive damages of an equal amount for squirreling his sale. And he went down and filed it. All right, now listen to what the issue is here. Pat Connolly's claim is that he doesn't own the land, but he has the right to use it. And that he's had that right to use it for many, many years before this LID came in, and that he was grandfathered in, and that he did not want to sell that land. And he didn't sell it. But then he changed his mind, and now he wants to sell it, and the LID has come in, and they have squirreled his sale. And therefore, he's been damaged, and he wants the LID now to pay him that damage. He wants to sell the land to the Limited Improvement District. I mean, if you people want to buy my equitable interest in my right to this dirt, rock, and bricks and mortar, you can do that. It's called eminent domain. The LID could have come in there and condemned his property and taken it anytime they wanted, but they had to take it by paying him for it under the Fifth Amendment. And they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to pay the kind of money that it was worth. And so they just want to take it away from him. So the LID came against him now that he sued him. They came against him and they said, well, you're in violation of the law of Idaho. Why, you've got this toxic waste over here. You've got this sewage. And because you've got this sewage and you didn't hook up to the sewer over here, you are a threat to the health, safety, and welfare of all the people around you. And so they've brought now an action, a criminal action against him. As their answer, as their defense to his claim that they're taking his property without just compensation. Hang on, I've got to give you a reminder here, and we'll take a look at the Connolly case, and we'll see how that comes out. Dealing in property. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. So be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. We should keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about property. Property is the holy grail in Anglo-Saxon administration and Anglo-Saxon law. Now, Pat Connolly, now as our story progresses, received a ticket. He got a citation, a complaint from the LID, and it's entitled The State of Idaho versus Pat Connolly. And it alleges that he's in violation of the health, safety, and welfare statutes. And so they cite statutes and say this guy's got dirty, noxious sewage emanating from his property, which is a threat to everybody. And that's why we have a sewer pipe running down Eustick Road to carry this god-awful, toxic, nasty waste away and to protect all the people from disease and wickedness and evil being perpetrated by Pat Connolly. So now Pat has to come in, and the judge asks this question. He says, Mr. Connolly, how do you plead to this charge, guilty or not guilty? Now, if Mr. Connolly comes in and pleads not guilty to this charge, from that point on, he cannot win. If he comes in and pleads guilty to that charge, from that point on, he cannot win. Now, I know you people have all been watching Perry Mason, and you know that when you've been watching Judge Judy, you're knowledgeable, you're smarter than God, and you know how to go in and make your pleadings, but I'm just here to tell you that the minute you walk in there and plead not guilty, you then agree with the prosecutor. This is an agreement. And it says, I agree that the issue to be decided is what should we do with Pat Connolly's sewage. Now, boys and girls, that's a mere regulation. And government has the power to regulate sewage. If you walk in there and you want to argue sewage with the prosecutor, you can just put your head between your knees and kiss your ass goodbye because it's all over for you. Bottom line, you are dead. D-E-D. Dead on arrival. Now, Pat didn't walk in and plead not guilty. He walked in with an answer to the complaint, and he said, it's been alleged that I have sewage. He said, I don't have any sewage. I have property. And my property is in the form of night soil, and my night soil is stored in a concrete tank underground, which is the approved modality and methodology for storing fertilizer. My fertilizer is night soil. I deny that I have any sewage whatsoever. Now the judge, in this case it was Judge Carey, the judge now has to make a determination. Every judge does this at the beginning of every case. It's called the pleadings. And he asks himself, are we dealing with property and property rights, the holy grail of Anglo-Saxon law, or are we dealing with a mere custom or usage or regulation over here for which there's no property right? The judge looked at that and he said, wait a minute, we have a contested issue here. The government comes in and says this guy's dealing in a dirty, noxious, toxic waste called sewage that the law recognizes as being god-awful bad and nobody can have it. I mean, it's like moving, a truckload of dynamite into your garage, in Bellwood Estates. You can't do that. It is true, you have a right to own dynamite, but my God, you can't have a garage full of dynamite. You can't move in, 3 tons of dynamite and store that in your garage. Don't you think that your neighbors around you over there are going to get real concerned? All right. You can't have nuclear weapons. You can't have atomic bombs in your apartment. I mean, come on, guys, let's wake up and smell some coffee here. Government comes in and regulates people that are so far off the wall that they're a threat to everybody. But government is here to protect your right to property. Now, the question before the court at this juncture of time in the pleading stage is, are we dealing with sewage or are we dealing with property? If we're dealing with property now, this guy's got a right to this property. The state says he's dealing in sewage, and Pat Conley comes and says, no, I'm not. I'm dealing in night soil. I'm dealing in fertilizer. And it's properly stored in a concrete tank 6 feet underground. And I use it on my 7-acre farm. And I'm using it out here to grow vegetables and do things with. Well, the judge comes back and he says, okay, we're dealing with property. Coming out of the chute, we're dealing with property. So Pat Conley comes in with his defense, his property. The state comes in and they describe Pat Conley as being an anarchist and a terrorist and a threat to everybody. And they presented their case and they said he's got this god-awful noxious sewage. And, you know, well, Pat Conley in his half of the case, he says, well, where is this sewage? And they said, well, and is it running off of my 7 acres and onto somebody else's property? Has anybody else over here found any of this sewage on their property? No, the state couldn't produce anybody that had any Connolly sewage leaking over onto their side or onto their property. There wasn't any of it running out on Eustick Road. And so Connolly comes in and he says, now I got this tank underground, commonly known as a septic tank. And in that septic tank, I have human waste, and this human waste is known as night soil. And I take that night soil out, and I compost it, and then I break it down, and then I put it out here on my land. And then on my land, I use that land and that night soil and the nitrogen and all of the composted agents of it as fertilizer to grow vegetables. And then I eat those vegetables, and I produce more night soil, and then I take the night soil and I put it out here on my land and produce more vegetables, and we have a cycle here. It's a natural, normal cycle, and this is property and a property right. And furthermore, I've been doing this for more than 40 years, and a hell of a lot longer than the LID has been around. So when the criminal case comes to its conclusion, now this is not a jury trial. See, Pat Conley waived the jury trial. All we're talking about here is an issue of law. Do we have a right to this property? Is it property and do I have a right to it? It's a legal decision for the judge to make. No factual issues here at all. Judge Carey comes back and says, okay, there isn't any sewage leaking off onto anybody else's property. There's no evidence that this sewage is leaking into the water table. There isn't any evidence that this sewage is leaking onto Eustick Road and causing any smell or public hazard or any disease threat to anybody. Therefore, Pat Conley comes in. He testifies that he's using it, and it's his. Now, Pat Conley made the LID an offer in open court. He said, now listen, this LID is seeking to steal my property in violation of the Fifth Amendment. They're seeking to take my night soil by mislabeling it as sewage. And my night soil is worth, in my view, $1.40 a gallon, and we produce approximately 100 gallons of this night soil a day. And I want $140 a day. Now, they want me to hook up to the sewer system. And they want to take my night soil, mislabeled as sewage, and they want to take $140 worth of my property, and they don't want to pay me for it. Now, if the government wants to condemn my property, they certainly have the right to do that under eminent domain. But I want to be paid the fair market value for my night soil, commonly mislabeled as sewage. Now, if they will enter into a long-term 30-year contract with me, I will then take the expense and hook up to the sewer pipe. I'll pay for that myself. And then I want a meter on my sewer line so that it can meter the number of gallons of night soil that I am producing here on my farm. And I want to be paid $1.40 a gallon for my night soil. And if the state of Idaho will do that through their LID, then I will agree to sell it to them. But I will not give it to them free because it's mine and it's my property. That was his offer. Now, that would be, let's see, 140 gallons a day. How much is that? 100 gallons at $1.40, that's $140 a day, times 365 days a year is $51,100 a year, and a long-term contract times 30 years. Pat Conley said, if you will sign a contract, I will deliver to you 100 gallons of night soil a day. And I want you to sign a contract and guarantee me $1,533,000 over a 30-year contract to buy my night soil, because I don't have any noxious sewage. So the court found that he didn't have any sewage, but he did have night soil, and that he is making a tender offer to the LID. Now, the LID came to the conclusion that they did not want to pay him $1,533,000 for his night soil. What they wanted him to do was to hook up to the sewer district at his expense and then pay them $10 a month to dispose of his sewage. And Pat demonstrated that he didn't have any sewage to dispose. And so, therefore, he didn't need nor did he want their service. But that he did have night soil, and that he was willing to sell the night soil, although he was using all of it himself, and would just as soon use it on his own 7-acre farm. But if the state wanted to use their power of eminent domain, and if they wanted to take it for the public use, that he thought that $1,533,000 over 30 years would be a fair market value. And they decided, no, they didn't want to do that. So, now, with the criminal case out of the way, all we have to decide now is, has Mr. Conley been damaged in the civil case to the amount of $70,000? Well, hell, he was already at the closing and could produce witnesses, evidence, and testimony that he had been offered, and there was a $70,000 check sitting on the table. Now, this case did not go forward to trial because the LID, and we don't know exactly how this came down because, you know, they make these secret deals behind the table. But here's the way that the deal came down. The contractor, the developer, came to Pat Conley and said, hey, listen, Pat, the deal is on for the $70,000. All you have to do is to come into my office, deliver the quitclaim deed, and I've got the $70,000 check. It's not for $69,200. You're going to get your full $70,000. Okay? So Pat went down and he got the full $70,000. And then he walked out and he gave the quitclaim deed, which Pat did not own 7 acres. And he never claimed to own the dirt, the rock, the bricks, and the mortar. He just claimed that he had a right to use and that the 7 acres was his subject to property. And he sold all of his right, title, and interest to the developer. What we don't know is, did the developer pay the LID the $800? Did the LID eat the $800 and the developer took? Because, see, the developer now comes under this new regulation. He's buying this land subject to this new law that has been enacted. But Pat Conley, see, was grandfathered in. But just because he was grandfathered in doesn't mean that the state won't bring unbearable pressure against you, that they will threaten you. They'll actually charge you with crimes and take you to trial, for crying out loud. That goes on all the time. This is why people have been convinced that you can't beat City Hall. That's not true. But you have to be on the right side of the issue. I mean, you can't just walk in here and plead not guilty. They brought the criminal action because if Pat Conley had, like most people would have, gone in and pled not guilty, he would have reduced the controversy to sewage. Well, you can't have sewage. That's the bottom line. The burden is on Pat Conley to come in there and prove that he's got property. And he did. That's all. He just walked in there and said, hey, let me show you I've got property here. And my property is worth money, and these people are seeking to take it without just compensation. That's an inverse condemnation, and I don't want to do that. All right. Now, most people wouldn't argue over that $800, and that's why these government agencies and institutions are able to run roughshod over the citizenry. It's because the citizenry is ignorant of their rights. And so now, when you people from Australia, New Zealand, and Canada call me and you say, well, will that work here? Well, of course it works there. There are some subtle differences and changes. I don't deny that. You people speak a different form of English than we do, and we don't really understand. For instance, you people use words like lift instead of elevator, and boot instead of trunk, and bonnet instead of hood. But, you know, you go on holiday and we go on vacation. But all in all, once we get these colloquialisms under control, you know, you people deal in property in Australia just like we do here. You people in Canada, you know, you people are dealing in property. And you've got cases up there, and you've got judges up there, and your judges in Canada and down in Australia, they're all looking at the same thing. Are we dealing with regulation, or are we dealing with property rights? And in most cases, in 99.9% of the cases, the judge isn't dealing with property, he's dealing with regulation. And you people walk in, and you are the subject of the regulation. Voluntarily, they ask you, how do you plead? And you say, I plead not guilty. And you reduce the controversy to a single clear-cut issue of fact. Do you or do you not have sewage? You know? Are you or are you not hooked up to the sewer? And, you know, that's easy enough to figure out. And the judge, you know, he can figure that out. So what your job is to prove that you've got some right involved here. It could be a religious right. I got a guy up in Canada and he circumcised his son. I mean, he personally circumcised his own kid. Now, you know, normal people like you and me, when we want to circumcise our kid, we do typically take him to a doctor. We here, where I'm at, we take him up to the rabbi. And the rabbi, who happens to be a medical doctor, you know, takes the baby in, and on the eighth day, they circumcise him, and they charge us $75. Now, when you go to the hospital and you have this done, they want $5,000. The rabbi does it for $75. You know, just last time we had one. I haven't had one for a while, but I'm just pointing out that. Now, this guy, he's up in Canada, and he circumcises his own kid. Well, Abraham circumcised his kid. Circumcision's been going on in Anglo-Saxon administration, boys and girls, for at least 3,000 years. I mean, you know, it isn't something that just... But social lady came in and said, oh, my God, that's kind of cruel and unusual. And so I told this guy, I said, listen, you know, you walk in and you make your defense, and he's going to have to go in and make his defense. He's got to go make his case. And if he does it correctly, the judge is going to sit there. He should waive jury trial. There's no issue of fact to be decided. Hell, everybody's in agreement. He circumcised his own kid. Now, the question is there some rule, regulation, custom, usage, or practice that's been violated over here? You know, Canada, you know, you Canadians up there, you people have religious freedom rights. Even all of the people of the world under the United Nations Charter has a doctrine of human rights. Did you know that? Do you know how to enforce your United Nations doctrine of human rights? Do you know how to enforce your Canadian free exercise rights, your religious rights? Now, your constitution in Canada and your laws in Canada are going to use different words than we use here in the United States. But the principles of law don't change in Anglo-Saxon administration. Moses wrote the law. He got it from God himself. And you Canadians are practicing the same law that they practice in England, Wales, Scotland, and Ireland. And so are we here in the colonies. We haven't changed anything. Except that, you know, we don't call it the bonnet. We call it the hood. We don't call it the lift. We call it the elevator. You know, now once you get over these colloquialisms, you people can practice law. You people can practice Anglo-Saxon administration anywhere in the world. And in fact, most of us are now practicing the Roman civil law. And that's called code pleading. Hell, if you can just walk in there and code plead the law, for crying out loud, you can practice Roman mercantile law and win 90% of the time. But you got to be on the right side of the issue. And oftentimes when people walk into my classroom, They think that they've got a case. They think they've got rights when, in fact, they're actually dealing with privilege. Here's a classic case. A guy called me from Canada the other day, and he said he got a ticket, a traffic ticket. The Ranger Rick, we call him down here. I guess you call him the Mounties up there. But the Mountie gave him a ticket for, I forgot what it was now, he'd done something. And so I said to him, sir, do you have a driver's license? And he said, well, yes, I do. I said, well, that settles the issue. It's a regulation. Any property rights involved here? You don't have any rights. You know, you people with marriage licenses, you know, you don't have any rights. You've got a contract in play here. Now, when we're dealing with rights, now, that's a different breed of cat now. That's what I'm pointing out to you. But you people aren't dealing in rights. You're dealing in privilege. And as long as you're dealing in privilege, then you're a ward of the state, and the state comes along and says, okay, stand up, sit down, come here, go there, wake up, go to sleep. Now, if you can remove yourself from the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and go back to the 10 commandment model, the 10 commandments now deal in property. The 10 commandments now deal in rights. The 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto deal in privilege, deal in franchise, deal in income tax. It's the exact opposite. There's only two forms of law on the planet. You're either practicing the Roman civil law or you're practicing the 10 commandments. You're practicing the law of God or the law of the state, one or the other. There isn't 15 models of law out there for you to practice. You're just doing one or the other. And so the legislature, when it's setting, it always enacts the law under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. So in Australia, you've got a Commerce Clause in your Constitution. Up in Canada, you've got a Commerce Clause. And your legislature is enacting statutes in regulation of commerce. Now, commerce is strictly prohibited in the Scripture. So I know you've got a Chamber of Commerce, and you're engaged in commerce, and you have a business license. All right, so you're regulated and controlled under your Commerce Clause. Now, if you want to get out from under the Commerce Clause, now you can deal in rights. And that's all Pat Conley did here. He's not dealing in commerce. He's dealing in rights, and he has a right as a farmer to use night soil to grow his vegetables in a natural cycle. Recognized in Anglo-Saxon and in Roman civil law jurisprudence everywhere in the world. Everybody can do that. Now, of course, guys like Monsanto come along and they want to patent natural life forms and processes, and then they want to get a patent on it, call it a genetically modified organism, and control the food supply. And they're in the process of doing that, which is why I keep telling you, you need open pollinated seed. You need to be out of the commercial system, practicing rights and property, and then you can withstand an assault by Monsanto. But as long as you're out here as commercial man, by golly, when Monsanto sues you now, they're going to eat your lunch. So tuck that one away in your heart and understand this difference now between commerce and property, between rights and franchise. And remember, if you're a normal, average, run-of-the-mill Joe Sixpack, you're engaged in commerce and privilege. You're going to have to do something to remove your status and to put it back under the Ten Commandment model. Just walking in and telling people I'm a sovereign citizen, it doesn't hack it. All that does is send a signal to the judge that this poor fool over here doesn't know whether his hind end is bored or punched. That's what it tells the judge. All right, we're about out of time here, kids, so I'm going to have to remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Let's see here. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. org, georgegordon.org. All right, that's about the end of our program. I got to remind you here that our time is up. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.